coming to you from the Flexbox Fantasy Federation's World Broadcasting Headquarters in Ottawa. This is a very special episode of the weekly show. I'm your host, Nick the Man Penner. I'm joined by my good friend, WizKid Jeremiah Johnson, and also joined by the winner and new champion of the league, Cam McInnes. Welcome to the show, everybody.
It's good to be here.
I'm not allowed to talk until after he talks, I think, for every part of the show.
Obviously, there's a lot to talk about. I could go on forever with this introduction, but I think it's only fair to just open the floor up right away to the man who's earned this time to speak as the league champion, Cam McInnes. Cam, what do you have to say for yourself?
I'm very proud of my team, and I'm very happy I was able to win the championship this year, especially because, as I recall, virtually everyone who came on the weekly show Daily Edition said they were pulling for Flex for some lame reason, like he had never won a championship before. But I think it's good that the rich were able to get richer here. I would also like to note for the umpteenth time that my prediction, the curse of that KKK leader who got murdered, Frank Ancona, did come true in that I initially thought Flex's season would be cursed by him missing the playoffs, but it turns out that he actually got to make the playoffs largely because of a trade I made with him and then lost in heartbreaking fashion. And I think that's what you get when you name your team after a hate group. So that's it.
Inspiring words, Cam. Obviously, very happy to have you as a champion, unlike the hatred-promoting Flexbox. One question I got to ask you right off the bat, because this is the question I asked Chow last season when I asked him if he was the league's greatest manager of all time. At the time, Chow said yes, he was, because he was the first manager to ever win two league championships. You now also have two league championships. So the question to you is, are you the greatest manager in league history?
I'm definitely the most creative manager in league history based on the way I won my championships. I think there's an argument that non-consecutive championships are more impressive than consecutive championships, considering it's with different franchises that I had to rebuild from the ground up. But to be completely honest, I consider Chow and myself to be the co-title holders of league's greatest owner.
So presumably that makes next year the blow-off, maybe, where one of you overtakes the other in terms of overall greatness in league history?
I think we all know that Jatisha is going to win the championship next year. So we'll see. I think I'm just trying to make the playoffs here.
Bold predictions at the end of the 2017 season, about the end of the 2018 season. One more question, Cam, which is, how are you going to celebrate?
I have decided to celebrate tonight with a glass of water and a very small package of peanut M&Ms, because school tomorrow will prevent me from drinking. But at some point, I will acquire a lobster and some champagne and do it up.
We better see some Slack photos from that. That's all I can say.
So just to hop in here, because I got to say, like, this whole debate about best manager of all time is pretty interesting. But I think, and like, this is kind of ironic that perhaps your biggest critic, Cam, is the host of the show. But I think it's arguable that you are a better manager than Chow, if nothing else for the fact in which you won your two championships, which you found almost like, I don't want to say a loophole, but an advantageous way of structuring your team both years to win the championship, which Chow did not do.
I mean, in fairness to Jeffrey Chow, he basically built a really good team, and while he probably wasn't like the highest scoring team, especially in the second year when he won the championship, he got good and stayed good, which is sort of the objective. Whereas I kind of get good and then get very bad, whether it's by giving players away for expansion reasons or the year I came last because I thought that trading for Dylan Bundy was a good idea. Trading Miguel Cabrera for Dylan Bundy ostensibly was a good idea. So, I mean, I definitely have a lot more blemishes because I've had a lot more risks that have worked out both ways than Chow.
Well, I mean, interestingly enough, Dylan Bundy was on the losing team this year. So there's that.
Everything comes full circle.
Time is a flat circle. We can take a look real quick at the box score for your matchup, Cam. Obviously, loyal listeners have listened to every episode of the Weekly Show Daily Edition, so they know every twist and turn in this epic tale that will be retold for generations. But today, Sunday, was the decisive day. Flex was in a big hole going in. He needed a huge comeback if he wanted a chance to win the championship. It looked for a brief minute there at the very start of the day like he might be off on a track that would see him win, but his dreams were utterly shattered around, let's say, 2:25 p.m. Eastern time when Joe Biagini got in the game for the Blue Jays and proceeded to toss 1.1 innings of absolute stinker baseball. He put up negative 10 points for Flex today, and that was basically the only chance of Flex winning erased. Flex did win on the day, 45.9 points to 19 points for you, Cam. But in the end, it's the overall scoreline that counts, and you did come out ahead. You are the champion of the league thanks to a 294 to 257.5 victory for you.
Yeah. I actually felt like kind of an asshole today for cheering against Joe Biagini. I was mainly just hoping he would not get a quality start, but then I just felt like I was piling on when it was just run after run after run. And then he left the game with the bases loaded, and Tim Meza like immediately let all those guys score. So I felt really bad for Joe Biagini, less bad for Flex Fox.
I mean, sorry to interrupt here, but like, I don't think Sunday had anything to do with this matchup. I think if you look at the box score, Thursday, Friday, clearly the days that mattered. And if you want to pinpoint one particular start, you should pinpoint Trevor Bauer absolutely sucking versus the Kansas City Royals, which we did talk about, I think, on one of the shows, that Trevor Bauer probably should have put up 15, 20 points, which could have made this matchup a lot more interesting.
Trevor Bauer, the GOAT here, and not in a positive way. Now, there were obviously a lot of storylines going through this matchup, Cam, but I think the biggest one was the question of Flex Fox's confidence as a manager. He made some questionable moves at the start of this week that ate up one of his matchup acquisitions. He proceeded to pick up Robbie Grossman, who did dick all for him in the end. What is your opinion here? Was this a situation where Flex sort of screwed himself, or were you just a stronger team overall and nothing Flex could have done would have overcome you?
I don't really know. Sorry, I have to actually look at some of his pickups. The Robbie Grossman pickup is, I understood where he was coming from because Grossman is hot. But if you have owned Robbie Grossman, you have experienced the evil that is Paul Molitor and all the really shitty players who get to play over Robbie Grossman. It's very painful to own Robbie Grossman because of this. Who else did he pick up? I know he picked up some relievers.
Well, the biggest one was when he added Ariel Miranda and then proceeded to drop him without using the start he had on Monday. So effectively, he wasted a pickup on Ariel Miranda that he later reversed. And so there was some controversy over whether that was an honest mistake or whether that was just a Flex Fox goof-em-up.
Yeah. I don't know exactly. I would theorize that it was mostly like he wasn't sure about what the starter schedule would look like. And it is really hard, especially at this time of year. Teams can be very unreliable with changing like who they put into pitch and like messing up with the schedule. So I think that probably contributed to this mistake. On my part, I was scared of this, which is why I waited so long to pick up Alvarez and Andrew Moore. People also did criticize my pickups this week, and I would argue that I was just kind of put into an unfortunate situation. I needed to pick up some starters to beat Aiden, so then I tried to replace them with the relievers, which was Rondon and Dunsing. And Dunsing, or however you pronounce his name, was actually really good for me. Rondon got injured, but I mean, I couldn't foresee that. And then like Trevor Williams randomly got a start skip, so I had to pick up someone to get to six. And I only had two left, and because of my start schedule being like just terrible, there was basically no way I could get any more than that.
So many questions, so little time. First of all, I guess because you mentioned them, you had Alvarez and Moore as your streamers today. They ultimately did not contribute very much to your cause. Neither had a great game. Collectively, they put up exactly 1 point for you. But were those additions entirely about your team and enhancing your talent, or was there also an element to them of keeping guys out of Flex's hands?
I don't mean to call you out, Nick, but this line of analysis doesn't make any sense because at the time I picked them up, Flex had used up all his pickups, so he couldn't put his hands on them regardless of what I did. But to address my intention here was just to find starters who wouldn't have terrible games. I know Henderson Alvarez hasn't pitched in 2 years, but we know who Henderson Alvarez is. He's going to come into the game. He's going to throw fastballs. They're going to be low. People are going to hit them, and he's going to eat up some innings. And I didn't get the quality start I thought I might get, but it is what it is. And Andrew Moore is very average. If I had been losing in this matchup, or if the matchup had been at all close, I would have picked up Ubaldo Jimenez, who I want to say put up 13 today, just because I thought it would be funny to like have my season rest on Ubaldo's shoulders. But sadly, I did not have the balls to pick up Ubaldo, and I chickened out with Andrew Moore. Although I do love Henderson Alvarez, so maybe I'll keep him.
You guys should ask Baltimore how that feels. But, I mean, I wish we had the clip, but if I went back to Tuesday's podcast, when both of you still had matchup acquisitions, I believe I said Mr. Matthew Boyd would be a great pickup to start on Sunday. And sure enough, you just listen to me.
You can't trust the Tigers, though. The Tigers have had so many games recently where they've lost, like, 18-0, so I was way too scared to do that.
That's fair.
Good call out on me for pointing out that Flex did not have any starts left or acquisitions left at the time you picked up those two starters. My bad on that one. But I also got to ask you about the rumors concerning your bullpen, that you were frustrated with it, that you felt you'd made fatal errors considering that with the September roster expansion, teams had a deeper ability and didn't need to play guys as many days as they had earlier in the season, and also the fact that you had a bunch of doubling up in terms of the bullpen guys you had. You had two Angels, you had two Cubs, you had, you know, a bunch of guys from the same team's bullpens all in your lineup, and the thought that that could hurt you too. I mean, just that whole nebulous cloud around your bullpen. How do you respond to that? Do you feel like it was an optimal bullpen for you in the end?
I would argue that having multiple guys on the same team, on the same team's bullpen is fine. And I might actually argue that it makes your team more consistent because, say, the Angels are winning a game and they've gotten 6 innings from a starter. I think it's likely, assuming the game is close, it's likely that at least one of Bedrosian or Parker will get into that game, which is nice. Now, if you had 4 or 5 guys in the same bullpen and that team had like a bad turn where they weren't winning any games, I think it could be problematic. Another element of my bullpen is a lot of these guys play on the West Coast, or at least played on the West Coast this week, which I think in a lot of the podcasts, my team had a really shitty score and people were like, oh, Cam had a terrible day today. But it just ended up being that my guys didn't pitch until like 1 a.m. Eastern. So that's I guess another point. In terms of the September roster thing, it's kind of hard to say. I think that teams obviously have more relievers at their disposal. So in like blowouts, it's less likely for players like Jose Leclerc, who's fallen out of favor, to get like a random appearance. But I mean, most teams are still trying to win, and even good teams want their closers to not get rusty. So it in the higher leverage games, at least, I felt that the usage was generally consistent with the rest of the year. The exception to this is Chris Devensky, who got like used a whole bunch this year, and he's been used like really sparingly in September, which was, I suppose, kind of frustrating.
That's all fascinating stuff. Could listen to you talk forever about this. You should do an entire podcast series just on bullpen management. I'm not sure how much else there is to talk about with this matchup. other than the question to you, which I believe I also asked you after your semifinal matchup, which was how confident were you? It sounds like even in the last day, you still had some doubts about the idea that you could win the league championship. So when did you really feel secure in your status as league champion?
I mean, as soon as I made the final, I knew the curse from that KKK guy would ensure that I won. So I didn't actually have any real doubts. But that aside, being honest, I'm like just always super nervous about everything. So I was convinced I was going to lose today. And I was literally like walking around the house looking for tasks to like waste some time. So I wasn't just like staring at my team, watching like Flex's guys pile up hits and like reliever appearances. Like I literally volunteered to like sweep some shit off our driveway just to like waste half an hour. So I wouldn't be like looking at my phone and looking at our team. And I mean, if I'm going to be honest, the last day against Aiden was like really bad too, where I eventually just like gave in and had like three different screens with three different games. And I was like just flipping out, but it all worked out. So I am the most nervous owner in the league. Trust me.
Jeremiah, anything you want to add here on the topic of the championship final?
No, I mean, I don't know. I feel bad for Flex because he came so close but didn't win. It's sad.
I have one more thing that I want to say. I guess just to sum up my season, and I just think this is insightful analysis, that my bullpen was really good this year, and maybe with quantity and the like guys like Davinsky who are really nice SP relievers, it probably was the best bullpen this year. But I would argue that the real reason why I won the championship and I was tied for the best record all season is that I had the best starting rotation this season. And that's not to say that I think I have the best starting rotation, because I'm sure a lot of people have like way better pitchers than me. Like I would love to have a Kluber or Carrasco, but considering like at one point Godley was great, Nelson was great, Wood was great, who am I forgetting? Morton was great and Paxton was great. At one point, I literally was getting the best starting rotation in the league. And I mean, this is almost purely luck, right? Like Jatish got Alex Wood for like almost nothing from Jeffrey Lim. And then I managed to trade for him. I had Paxton from the year before. I think Aiden dropped Jimmy Nelson and I probably would have too at that point. And then he had a good start and I picked him up and he just like blew up from there. I think I drafted Zach Godley and then dropped him because he got sent down to the minors. And then I end up just picking him up for a spot start. And that worked out beautifully. And like even like Charlie Morton, I traded Nick Lance Lynn for Trent Clark because I wanted to pick up Charlie Morton. But I mean, I thought so little of him, I didn't even bother drafting him. And that also worked out really well. And while my ability to evaluate starting pitchers seems to be pretty good, I just got like really fucking lucky with all of these starting pitchers. And if I didn't have them, there's no way. I probably wouldn't have even made the playoffs.
I think there's something to be said for that, though. Like, I think if you look at a lot of the teams that have won championships in the last few years, pitching has usually been the anchor of their team. And a lot of it is luck. Like, I mean, if you asked me who would be great at the beginning of the year, like, yeah, Lester. But other than that, maybe Paxton. The other three are, like, pretty out of nowhere.
Paxton was good last year for his limited. But Paxton's good. It's just that he has a quarterly, if not more often, trip on the disabled list, which can stunt his value.
You also didn't waste any points at catcher. You didn't bother picking up like a fringy shortstop either. So,
offense. You just try. I just tried to give myself the best chance, and Joey Votto worked out really well. No regrets, I guess. And like Nelson, I just kind of figured like these guys more often than not would be big positives. And I mean, yeah. So I just tried to like minimize risk on offense as much as I could.
I think it's like you said, Cam, on paper, your team might not have been the best this season, but in practice they were. Games are rarely won on paper. They are one on the digital homepages of ESPN. So there were a couple of matchups this week that we can also take a look at. The championship final was not the only one that mattered. There was also, as a lot of people have talked about now, a Europa final that ended up being every bit as exciting as the championship final was, full of twists and turns. Nobody really knew how it was going to go, even down to the wire. It looked like there could be a Hail Mary comeback. But in the end, Jatheesh has won the Europa Championship, the Stepping Stone belt, with a total score of 336 to 312.1 for Jeffrey Chow. Both these teams had huge individual days, with on Friday, Jatheesh, he put up 101.3 points, and then Chow responded the next day with 116.5 points. So huge point totals overall in the week, huge single day point totals. Guys, what do we think about both the teams in this matchup?
I think it was really impressive, the total of points they put up. The only caveat I would place on this is, I can't speak for Jeffrey Chow. I assume he did this. I suppose I could actually look at the matchup and answer this question myself. But I know Jatheesh was able to take advantage of an easy matchup in the semifinals of Europa, where it allowed him to make pickups to really set up his championship week well. Whereas, like, to contrast that with myself, I had to worry about beating Aiden, so I had to use all my pickups to do that. And then that, like, a lack of pickups combined with my just horrific starting schedule for my championship matchup, like, prevented me from getting these points. So I would argue that I might have been able to catch Jatheesh if I had talked myself into Matt Boyd and Ubaldo if I had the extra pickups. But I mean, scoring 300 points in a week is still just ridiculously impressive, no matter how many starts you use. And I mean, I guess like Chow only had 9, which is one more than I had, and he outscored me. So I mean, both these teams are really good, and I think they're both likely playoff contenders next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to disagree with that. Like, I feel like, I mean, I'm kind of surprised how close this was. It looked like your prediction of 100 plus points was like going to happen. And I thought Chow was done, so I didn't even pay attention. And then he drops 116 points, so.
Chow has David Price and Adam Morgan today, but I think he maxed. I'm not clear, but his point total might go down a little bit. I don't know exactly how their starts. Yeah, he might lose about 9 points. Just saying, but whatever. It's still over 300.
Yeah, still over 300. And obviously, Chow owes a huge debt of gratitude for his comeback to Josh Donaldson, who had his second back-to-back 2-home-run game, 5 home runs in the past 3 games. Obviously, the dude can mash. But even still, it wasn't enough for Jatheesh. I had both these guys on the Weekly Show Daily Edition, and they had lots of good insights about their team. But I think it's fair to say, like you said, Cam, I wouldn't be surprised to see these guys both in the playoffs next year. They were both teams that could have been there this year if it wasn't for some bad luck. So who knows how the tables will turn next year.
I am looking forward to the Community Shield.
That'll be a very interesting matchup, especially if Jatheesh stays on his current course of competing next year.
A very spicy one indeed next year. So jumping back to one of the finals consolation, the championship bracket, but it was the third place matchup between the two losers of the semifinals, between Jameel and Aiden. Aiden, of course, was on the show earlier today, technically yesterday now, previewing the Sunday matchup, and he had hoped that he might still be able to win third place. He was unsuccessful in that quest, unfortunately. Jameel did have a good Sunday and was able to win 241.3 to 207.1 for Aiden. Guys, what are your thoughts on this matchup?
I think it's hard to evaluate these matchups sometimes because teams, after losing out of the playoffs, are often, I believe Aiden actually mentioned this in his podcast that I listened to today, but it can be hard to really be into a third place matchup. But with that said, both of these point totals are respectable, and I guess Jameel knows the pain I felt when I lost in the semifinals and didn't get to play him in the final in the first year.
I mean, I want to get your opinions because I I'm obviously overtly critical of Aiden's team because I just don't think it's actually that good. But, like, do you guys think he can come back next year and be this good again or better?
I think that it's difficult to analyze any of this because he, as he said, he's going to have a busy offseason. And, like, we can't be assured that some asshole, that means you, Jeremiah, won't trade him like Cody Bellinger and Trey Turner for some prospects and just like drastically change his team. Generally speaking, I'm looking at his team right now. I think he has a competitive enough offense. Yeah, the pitching kind of sucks. I don't know. I probably wouldn't pick him as a prohibitive playoff lock, and our division will presumably still be difficult. But I definitely think he has a chance, especially because he's going to get like 2 free wins against Ashley next year. So that's always nice.
I was very curious by Aiden's comments on the Weekly Show Daily Edition today. Maybe I should have addressed this directly with him, but he did say that he was going to sort of see how the market played out as to whether to strengthen his team or maybe fall back and rebuild a little bit. For me, it seems like his team is in a very similar position to where Chow was after the 2014 season, where he finished third, but was able to add a couple pieces that offseason and really sort of go all in and try and win now. I feel like if Aiden committed to that path, if he was able to get a couple veteran guys who are less valued in our league but still have value in fantasy baseball itself, he would definitely be a competitor for next season. So it'll be interesting to see whether he follows that approach in the offseason or whether he stays true to his word and just plays the field a little bit.
It's hard to know too in the offseason. Like, dynamics change so much when people go from trying to field the best 25 players to whittling down to their 15 or less keepers.
Yeah, I mean, players that have value at the end of the season, unless they're like a surefire keeper, lose like a lot of value. At least I find in trades, like somebody who you might think could be serviceable, for example, like a Yasiel Puig, has like no value in the offseason because people would not keep this player or not want to.
I think that's a fair assessment, especially like positionally too at right field.
Yeah, like I find like right field, first base, like these positions go down a lot because they're the most common, and like there's lots of that in the draft. So unless like I find a lot of discussions with teams start off with like obviously your very best players, which make it hard to get things done at times.
Flipping over to Jamil for a second, he did win this matchup, the third place winner for the season. This is the first time he's finished in the league top three since he won the league in the inaugural season in 2012. So I think it's a good testament to Jamil's tenacity, his audacity, his ability to stick with it and really turn his team into one of the better teams on the season for the league, obviously with his third place finish.
I mean, Jamil has made the playoffs in every single season of the league, which is really, really impressive. So hats off to him for that, I guess.
The Detroit Red Wings of our fantasy league. But, I mean, it sucks for him, I guess, right? Like, he was pretty close, too. And his team's kind of also, like, I would say decently good, but not quite good enough. So, like a lot of us, he's going to be making a couple moves to try to tweak things.
Yeah, I mean, nobody's not tweaking things in the offseason. But I think you're right that Jamil definitely has to take a long look at his team and see what's what.
Oh, I have a hot rumor, by the way, about tweaking things in the offseason. Today I discussed the possibility of a trade with one Garth MacInnis, and he seemed intrigued. So we may have a truly shocking development in the coming weeks. But that's all I can say right now.
I mean, is this really, like, free trade here? Like, Garth MacInnis is, like, unreachable, but you can reach him because you live in the same household. So doesn't that put you at, like, a competitive advantage?
You can reach him, too. He tells me about every single one of your trade offers and just laughs and says, I'm not even going to decline this. I'm just going to let it expire on my team.
What a guy. He really belongs in our division.
I would, for one, be very excited to see this new Garth McInnes. He's gone through different, very slight evolutions every season in terms of his overall interaction profile with the league. So if this is the new Garth McInnes, who's about to make just a shit ton of trades, I am all for that. Love to see that one happen.
Garth McInnes would also like everyone to know that on this championship day, the Memphis Redbirds in AAA, I think it's the International League, won the championship. And they are, of course, St. Louis's minor league affiliate, who is managed by Stubby Clapp, who also won the Manager of the Year in his league. So, yay for that.
Imagine that.
Wow. He would further like everyone to know that Stubby Clapp is actually Stubby Clapp the Third, because when you're nicknamed Stubby, I guess you have Stubby Kids.
Yeah.
We are all Stubby on this blessed day.
And every other day in my case.
Well, I wasn't going to say it, but yes. Stubby McInnes the First.
Start of a dynasty.
A couple other matchups we can take a look at. Jeremiah, I think it's fair to talk about yours next. Aiden highlighted this one in his episode of the Weekly Show Daily Edition today as a matchup to watch because of the budding rivalry between you and Chris Kennedy. Seems like there's some animosity on Slack between the two of you that sort of spilled onto the field in this one. It was not the most exciting matchup in the world, though, with Chris Kennedy coming out on top, 211.9 to 159.7 for Jeremiah. Jeremiah, your perspective on all this?
I mean, a rivalry insinuates that both teams try and that both teams in ideal circumstances are close, and neither of these things were the case. I did not try in this matchup, and our teams are not close. Chris Kennedy could say what he wants about my Sons of Anarchy shirt, but the man's team is shit, and it is not good. And if you want to look at total points for the season, which clearly are an indicator of something since the leader of total points is our league champion, then my team is much better than Chris's.
Are you actually claiming that the winner of the toughest division in the league doesn't have a good team?
That's exactly what I'm claiming. It is like he might have won the toughest division, but I don't think his team's good.
I guess we'll find out next year.
Yeah, can we have a rivalry week? I would love to face Chris.
We will get to new suggestions for rules later in this podcast. So maybe we can.
That's the bureaucratic response to no.
I'm just going to say it, Jeremiah. This is a lot of tough talk for a man that put up 159 points this week. Was it really that hard for you to try? Did you have big plans this week?
Well, I just thought like I would add players here and there that like might have some like potential for off-season value. So I didn't really use any pickups on starts. I ran like 14 batters on my team or something like that and played like none of them. So like it's not that hard to see that I clearly did not make matchup acquisitions with the intent of scoring points.
Recently, I can explain what Jeremiah was doing actually. So recently, I was watching TVO Kids at 4:30 to catch my Arthur episode because I need to learn strong morals. And I noticed that there's another show on TVO Kids called Androids, which is created by someone named J.J. Johnson. And we all know who that is. So we should all congratulate Jeremiah on his show-running career.
Yeah.
Big props to Jeremiah for that one, I guess. Good work getting that TVO Kids money.
It's a good contract, yeah.
What do we think about Chris Kennedy's team for next year? Obviously, Jeremiah, you have no regard for it whatsoever. Cam, do you have a more reasoned approach, maybe?
I feel like Chris was treated a little unfairly for the Jake Lamb for Justin Turner trade. I mean, I love Justin Turner probably more than anyone else, but Jake Lamb is actually really good. With a lot of new owners, I mean, his team is fine. It could conceivably make the playoffs, although the starting pitching was suboptimal, we'll say. But I find a lot of new owners, I don't know if this will be Chris, but a lot of new owners really struggle to reach elite team status. It's not all that hard to build a good team or to even take a good team that they were gifted with at the start of the season and not horribly fuck it up, but it can be really hard to actually get two or three more stars while ostensibly not trading anything and like building your team up. Like getting the free stars like a Jimmy Nelson can take a combination of luck and knowledge that new owners tend to just not have. But I mean, we'll see. The division seems a little bit more wide open than some of the other divisions, although Jeffrey Chow's presumable resurgence will make it a little harder for him to win that division.
Yeah, I mean, looking at Chris's team, I think the big question is how, what trades he does make and what he does in terms of keepers, because right now he's on a path where he has, you know, maybe five or seven really solid keepers, but beyond that, the quality falls off in a hurry. So if he's maybe able to even that out a little bit more and get 15 really solid guys, or, you know, even 10 or 12, that's going to go a long way for him next season. And I think that he, in terms of a new manager, does have a lot of capacity. He seems to understand the league pretty well. So, yeah, interesting to see what's ahead for him.
I mean, I will say that perhaps his best trade, without reproach, would be his Freddie Freeman trade. If we're going to talk about, you know, managerial prowess, I thought that that trade was very good for him. The Jake Lamb trade I also thought was good. I don't remember if I was critical of it at the time or not. But Jake Lamb is like a younger, better asset, in my opinion, over Justin Turner. And I think I said that.
I'm all about the beard.
So we can also look at the other championship consolation match. Another grudge match to a certain extent, this one between Ryan and RKR. Ryan was the winner in this one, putting up 280.2 points, really making a statement here against an RKR team that struggled, obviously, with a 184-point total. Obviously, this game wasn't for anything in particular, but what did you guys think of it?
I mean, I would very much like to create a trophy, and I'm going to push for this, that is for the person who comes last out of all the teams that made the playoffs and call them the pretender of the year or something like that, because it's just sad to lose three straight games, even if you aren't really paying attention, in the top bracket. I think this, it's nice that Ryan's team finally performed about 2 weeks after he needed that performance. I think this was kind of expected, though, because, I mean, I don't think anybody believes that RKR had one of the best teams in the league. Even during his ridiculous run, which, I mean, props to him for winning all those games. It's good for the career wins total. But his point totals he was putting up just weren't that impressive. And he wasn't playing Ryan or me. And if he had been, he probably would have not had that same record. It's also worth noting that because he had Payne's team, and Payne never won any games, in theory, he had one of the easier schedules in the league, and then he got to play a lot of the other fifth-place teams in the different divisions.
And, I mean, I think Ryan's team got a lot of bad luck during the season. Like, he got a lot of injuries. A lot of his guys just had really subpar years. Like, Chris Bryan, for example, had, like, an MVP season and then dropped off to, like, barely an all-star level. So, like, a lot of stories like that kind of compounded to beat up Ryan. And, like, this whole juiced ball thing definitely took a hit on some of his pitchers, that's for sure.
So did unsafe ATV practices, apparently.
Yeah, that's it, kids. Wear your helmets.
Obviously, like you said, it's disappointing that RKR lost all three of his playoff matchups. Very clearly not trying in this one, too, but you don't like to see that. You'd like to see these guys really going out there. Both of these guys, I would point out, used zero matchup acquisitions this week, which makes me think they already think their team is somewhat set for the offseason. They don't feel a need to load up on tradable assets, so interesting to see how that one plays out. And for Ryan, I mean, at the very least, putting up 280 in what would have been the championship week has to feel at least a little bit good. And maybe it's something he can hopefully work into his plans for next season, only getting into the finals this time and then putting up that total.
Is it not worth considering that the reason they have zero pickups is because Jeremiah has kidnapped them and is holding them in a cell beneath his house so he can negotiate trades with them 24/7 during the offseason. I just think we need to discuss this possibility and potentially contact the authorities if no one hears from them.
I mean, that would be a great theory if RKR had any players I actually wanted. But, I mean, this is like, this aside, I think like these two teams for the offseason are like a totally different spectrums. Like, Ryan probably has to do very little to his team. I think he could just like keep the team he has, go into next season and be a title favorite. Whereas RKR is either going to have to make a decision to rebuild or to like go get a bunch of veterans to like supplement his team's low point total this year.
Nobody should ever rebuild. Just reload.
Okay. Well, he needs to reload then.
Well, and to be fair, we've been saying both of those things to RKR since about week one, and he never listened, and that worked out for him. So maybe he's just operating on a whole different level that we can't understand.
He just needs to get some better pitching, and then he'll be fine. Because, I don't know, apparently Jeremiah doesn't want Charlie Blackman, but discrimination against Blackman is why Flex Fox didn't win the championship, so that's not something I would advise.
Wow.
On that note, I would like to point out that the two people who won the important trophies, being the championship and Europa, were the two bastions of morality that really shine a light for the rest of the league. And I think that our success this season should really indicate to people that not employing criminals and degenerates and deplorables will really help your team succeed.
A good mid-episode PSA there from Cam McInnes. Strong talk. Let's move on. We've taken up enough time already. We can look quickly at these consolation matchups from the Europa that obviously don't mean jack diddly to anyone, except for me, because I beat Ash 215.3 to 210.6, and I feel pretty good about it. It's always nice to end the season with a W, so good for me on that one.
Whatever floats your boat.
Yep.
Yeah. Another result was that Richard Tillo beat Garth Newton in a major way, 244.1 to 76.1 for Garth Newton. So Tillo looking strong there. Garth Newton, not so much.
The whole week I was trying to figure out if we needed to like punish Garth for some kind of tanking measure. Although tanking during the playoffs is not necessarily something we really need to deter, but I don't think he had an illegal roster. I think he just was cold at the right time. Although he only had five starts, so that's not great.
It almost would have been nicer for him if he did have an illegal roster, then he'd have something to pin it on. But, you know, when you've got Machado putting up negative 5 points on the week, your top scorer is Carlos Gonzalez with 25, and he accounts for a third of your team's points. That's not great.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure he didn't care. I don't think he really managed his roster. He actually made pickups, disturbing, but he was picking up guys who, as I will address later, have a minor league impact potentially.
Yeah, definitely a note to circle back on there in terms of minor league eligibility. The remaining game from the Europa consolation round was Garth McInnes versus Mike Kaminsky, the Illuminati. Garth McInnes won this one, so that's exciting for him. He finishes the season, including the playoff record, above 500, which is always a good sign. So, yeah, props to Garth McInnes for winning 220.1 to 200.9 for Mike Kaminsky.
Mike's just on a downward spiral. Will it ever stop?
Future Vaze champion.
His team is not that bad. I don't think he's a future Vaze champion.
His team is not the problem. It's just a lack of managing skill.
I mean, this is the first week since the week ending August 13th that he's put up more than 200 points. So that's a real cold stretch for you there at the end of the year. So we can also look at the Vaze consolation matchups. First, we have Ian versus Jeffrey Lim. Ian 169.9, Jeffrey Lim 141.6. So Ian completes his Vaz sweep, really secures that Vaz championship, and has a lot to look forward to in the future, I think.
I mean, sorry, go ahead.
I look forward to decorating this vase.
I mean, Ian, the more interesting thing will be, is he going to keep anybody? Is he going to go for Otani? That'll be interesting. Jeffrey Lim's team, not so interesting. Kind of wondering, like, what he's going to do.
Ian, notably, if he doesn't go for Otani, if he does go for Otani and drops everyone, I am going to be a little upset because I attempted to get Felipe Rivero from him, who was having a very good season this year, at the trade deadline, and he wanted, like, Acuna for him, and I was like, no. And then I was thinking, like, are you even going to keep this guy? Like, this doesn't make any sense. But he played hardball and maybe helped him win this matchup. So, okay.
Okay, indeed. One more matchup, the final matchup from the final week of the season. Not the final season, just another season. But the final matchup, Wendy versus Wes. Wendy wins this one, 166.4 to 84.5. If this ended up being Wendy's final matchup as a primary owner of a team for some reason, whatever that might be, it's nice to know that she would go out with an eternal win streak, a one win streak that will never again be broken in all likelihood.
The good old three starts and still get a win.
Yeah, and three starts and got a loss. Management.
Wendy also played this week with an empty roster spot for no reason. So that's good.
Oh,
one less potential keeper. So it makes the decision easier.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I mean, really streamlining her process, I guess.
She still won, so whatever.
Yeah, good for Wendy. So that does it for our recap of the final week of the season, playoff week 3. What a week it was. Lots of highs, lots of lows. Agony, defeat, sorrow, elation. It had it all in it.
It did have a lot of those things.
So normally, this is where I would preview next week, but there no practice tomorrow. There's no one left to beat. So instead, Cam, you are one of the league managers in addition to your role as league champion. So if you want, you could maybe take us on a little preview of the offseason, talk about what's coming up for the league.
Okay. So the first thing that I'm going to talk about is the minor leagues and what you as an owner will need to do in the coming weeks. So there are ostensibly four different kinds of minor league players that we need to talk about. The first kind of minor league players are low minor league players who you can keep as many of as you want. And there's no reason you don't have to trade them. You can if you want to, but you don't have to trade them. You don't have to drop any of them. We have unlimited low minors keepers. So your low minor leaguers, you don't really have to do anything with. But I just thought I would mention that in case anyone was confused. With the high minors, this is where we get into a little bit more complicated stuff. So if you take a look at the minor league sheet, you'll notice that some players' names have been bolded. So these players, if their hitters have exceeded the 130 plate appearances, and if their pitchers have exceeded 50 innings pitched in the majors, so this means that these players are no longer eligible for the minor leagues, and you need to call them up before the minor league keeper deadline, which for now will be about October 7th, but we'll finalize that in the coming days. Now, you may have noticed that you actually can't make any pickups right now since the season has ended. Jeremiah tried to get around this and we shut him down. So I will probably reach out to you at some point and ask you about your guys, or you can also reach out to me if you want to. And basically, let's say, for example, Nick already picked up Carlos Asuagi, but just to use this as our example, if Nick wanted to call him up, I would talk to Nick and I would say, okay, you need to drop a player to make space for this guy. who do you want me to drop? And usually people just drop like a random reliever that they know they're not going to keep and they know they're not going to have any trade value. And generally, there's no downside into calling up guys who aren't eligible anymore because you have no obligation to keep them next year in the major league keepers portion. So you can just call them up and try to trade them. And if no one wants them, you drop them. Last year, the only person who didn't call up someone and just let them go was Aiden with Raul Mondesi Jr. And I would say this is kind of a goofy thing to do because there's no downside, but Mondesi had literally no value this year. So maybe Aiden just saved himself some aggravation, which I guess I can respect. So that's those guys. Anyone who has an asterisk beside their name, that's more just a thing for me. So I'll check it again, but those guys will likely be ineligible. We just have to wait for the major league season to end, which I believe ends on October 1st. But if someone's already ineligible, we might as well just do that call up now. Anyone for the guys who are still eligible, though, who aren't bolded, you can keep up to 8 of those guys on your team. So if you have more than 8 guys who are still minor league eligible, you're going to lose them. So you might as well try to trade them to a team that doesn't have 8 guys. Conversely, if you have 4 guys or fewer, you'll get a pick in the high minors draft. And the way that's going to work is if one team, let's say I have no keepers and Jeremiah had 4 keepers. If Jeremiah is ahead of me in the draft order, he'd still pick ahead of me. So we'd both pick at round 1, and then I would pick in rounds 2, 3, 4, and 5. So there's no real advantage to keeping less guys. You'll get an extra pick, but it won't help you jump the queue to get the first pick. The last thing I want to mention, and I don't know if people are 100% aware of this rule, but it is in the Constitution. If you have a guy on your team who is minor league eligible, but you own them on the major leagues. So an example off the top of my head, my dad has Sandy Alcantara. These players, if you choose to keep them on your major league roster past the minor league keeper deadline, you will be obligated to keep them in the major league draft. And if you manage to trade them at some point during the offseason, the person who trades for them will be obligated to keep them for the major league draft. I will try to remind people if one of these trades is about to happen, just so the owners are aware, but this is your warning. And over the next couple weeks, Jatheesh and I will reach out to you and basically say, are you going to commit to keeping this guy or are you just going to drop him? Because there's no reason, like no one benefits from someone just hoarding players so no one else can draft them when they know they're just going to drop them before the start of the season. So I think that's everything with the minor league stuff, but Nick and Jeremiah hopefully have some questions, points of clarification, and I am sorry for talking so long because this is probably really fucking boring if you knew all this shit already.
Fine speech. One question, I mean a couple, but first, right off the bat, I noticed that there are some guys on the minor league spreadsheet who have little asterisks next to their name. Are those the guys who are juicing?
They are. I can neither confirm nor deny if they're juicing. I looked up a prospect recently who got busted for some kind of weird stimulant, but no, it doesn't. It does not mean they're juicing.
What does it mean?
It means that they are close to being ineligible, but for your purposes, you don't really need to worry about it. It's more just a note. Like when I went through and was bolding people most recently, Ahmed Rosario was at 129 plate appearances. And at that time, for all I knew, maybe he was going to like tear his hamstring working out and miraculously still be eligible for the minor leagues. So I didn't bold him. I just put an asterisk. But I'm just going to go back and check all those guys at the end of the season, and they're either going to get bolded or the asterisk will be removed.
I don't remember if we talked about this or not. Do you have like tentative dates for the minor league keeper deadline and draft?
Right now, I'll say that the minor league keeper deadline will probably be October 7th. It needs to be after October 1st because that's the last day of the season when people could still, in theory, become ineligible. And then the minor league draft should be about a week after that. And for any of the new owners or people who have forgotten, we conduct the minor league draft on Slack. So usually the league managers are all sort of working together for this. But the way it works is I will announce who is on the clock, and then that person will direct message me their pick, and then we will go through our process to make sure you're not picking someone who is ineligible or owned or anything else like that. And once your pick is confirmed, it will be announced in the announcements channel. And all of those picks, because we eventually lose access to old Slack messages, get archived in the minor league sheet. If you look at the different tabs in the minor league sheet, you can look at last year and the first year's minor league drafts.
This is a dumb question, but it's something that almost tripped me up last year. If I select not to keep a guy, let's say, a Gavin Cecchini, I am allowed to redraft him because he's still minor league eligible, even though I previously owned him. There's nothing to stop me from owning him again.
Anyone who is minor league eligible, or at least anyone who is high minors eligible, can be drafted in the high minors draft. So there are, I'm not going to name all of them, but there are players who have been on someone's minor league team, have gotten called up, and then have gotten dropped for whatever reason, who are still eligible to be picked in this draft. So, for example, Nick had Carl Edwards on his team last year in the minor leagues, and then Edwards came up and was pitching, and Nick called him up, but he didn't accrue 50 innings. And so Nick just dropped him and then drafted him again in the minor league draft, which, while I wouldn't encourage that you draft a lot of relievers, if you feel the need to do this, you are entitled to do so.
Personally, I would encourage everyone to draft only relievers, but that's just me. Another question, since you brought it up, of logistics. There are separate high minor and low minor drafts this year, correct? And how many rounds are each?
The high minors draft will be 5 rounds, but the only person picking in the fifth, as of now, Jeremiah is the only one without any prospects in the high minors, although I guess Chow might try to do that too. So it will be 5 rounds, but because approximately half the league will have 5 or more keepers, and you can keep up to 8, but you only get picks if you have less than 5. The high minor league draft will be 5 rounds, but it will likely be pretty quick. And we'll see, once the minor league keepers go in, we'll see what the teams are that are in it. And I think we'll probably do both the same night. But once we have it sorted out how many teams need to be involved, maybe we can do some kind of alternate time if that makes it faster, easier for people. But we can't really say until the minor league keepers go through. Oh, and the low minors is just 5 rounds, and everyone picks 5 players. It doesn't matter how many guys you have in the low minors.
Good to know.
Sorry to interrupt. So just to clarify, if you have 5 major league players and someone else keeps 8 high minors, 4-5 high minors and someone else keeps 8, both of you would be ineligible for the high minors draft.
Correct. So if you have 5, you should be able to find someone better than the example I'm about to give you. But if you're sitting there and you have 5 or 6 high minors players, there are definitely going to be people who are trying to just sell some of their high minors players because they don't really want to keep them. But for you, there's not really much of an opportunity cost to doing so. So, for example, if you were to give me a 24th, I'd probably give you Carson Fulmer. And I mean, is Carson Fulmer a good prospect? Not really, but it's probably better to own him than no one. Because, I mean, I thought Parker Bridwell was pretty shit. And, I mean, like, not that he's good, but if you had him on your minor league team, you would have been able to call him up. And he did have some good starts towards the end of the year. So I would generally encourage people that if the cost is like a 24th or whatever, see what kind of prospects are out there. You might as well try to get to 8.
I think that just about takes care of all of my questions. Jeremiah, do you have any other ones?
No, that's pretty much all I got.
So obviously, that's probably the first priority after this season is to think about the minor league draft and minor league keepers. Cam, is there anything else upcoming that we should know about?
There are 2 more things I want to address. The first one is fairly simple. So trading is now open, but given that the there's less of a like time sensitivity factor because nobody needs to put a player in their lineup to start tomorrow, and I'm kind of busy right now, and I can't speak for Jatheesh, but trade processing might be a little bit slower than you're used to, but either way, your trades will go through. There are going to be times where trades are going to be suspended for a couple days just over the course of the offseason as we do different things. So, for example, there's going to be whenever the minor league keeper deadline and the minor league draft are going to happen, there's going to be at least a partial trade freeze on like minor leaguers, obviously. Like once minor league keepers are set, you can't trade your minor leaguers. We're also looking at a new system for how to do trades that will take away a little bit of the aspect of like, you message me at 10:50, but I'm busy and I don't announce it until the next day. Like this year, I tried to give people leeway. Like, it's not your fault that I wasn't at my computer, but I'm hoping to automate this, and we'll have more details about the new system soon. But just know that at some like random weekend in like December, I'm probably going to announce that there will be no trades. And I mean, you can still negotiate. It's just going to happen at the end. But at that time, we'll try to implement the new system and we'll give you instructions on how to use it. It should be simple. It should make the league better, but it's still, our league developers are still working on it. So we'll see when the time comes. The other thing that's a little bit more pressing is once all the minor league shit is taken care of, there's going to be a rules change summit, so to speak. So if you have any rules, I'd like to first remind people that the league commissioners or the board of governors, so Nick, myself, Adam, and Jatish, can make changes to the constitution in the offseason, and there's no vote, and we can basically do whatever the hell we want. But with that said, like, if you do have an idea for a new rule, we're going to start some kind of forum for people to submit their ideas for rules. And if your rule is like a scoring change or something, I'm probably going to ask you to like do some math and like show us a spreadsheet of like what the effect would be. But if you do have ideas for new rules, let us know. And then we'll take those ideas. We'll have a meeting. If your idea is like stupid or like it's just something that's destructive and not going to help the league, we're just going to automatically veto it. But any of the ideas that we think have merit, we're going to put together on a list, and then there'll be a big league-wide meeting that anyone can come join, and we can debate the merits of various rule changes. I can't speak for the other league governors, but from my perspective, there's a couple things in the Constitution that I don't really want to change the rule, but I'm going to kind of rewrite how it's phrased just to make it a little bit clearer. But yeah, if you do have ideas, please let us know, and we'll try to discuss them in good faith as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, just to reiterate that point, I think that there are a lot of people out there who are very involved with the league and have a lot of great ideas for how to improve it, either in terms of, like Cam said, scoring, or just like operationally making the league more functional and better. And in general, I think a lot of people have those ideas and then they either keep them to themselves or they mention it off air after a weekly show taping has ended. And this is your chance to really air those and get those out. And so hopefully a lot of people will take advantage of this process and really contribute to the league, because I know that a lot of people out there have some good ideas for how to improve things. And so I'd love to hear those.
Yeah, and I mean, even if your idea doesn't automatically get adopted, it's still good to just get it out there, because I mean, Nick is actually the one responsible for the original idea of a high and low minors. What we were gonna, our minor league reform looked way different. And then it was actually Nick's idea that Jatish and I took and kind of hammered out the current system we have now. So we rejected Nick's initial idea, but it ended up being very helpful in coming up with the right concept for a future rule.
All very good points. Anything else we should be looking for out of the league office this offseason?
Oh, if people have any, if you know anyone who you think would be a good fit in the league, if you just kind of want to onboard someone, or you think that they like have a good personality for Slack, but their baseball knowledge is a little suspect, we're very open to giving people co-owners. It could be a fun experience. We haven't really had a true like co-ownership yet in the league, but we'd definitely like to play with it. And I mean, maybe you can even use it to like offset your costs. And it's a good way to add people to the league community now, especially that we can't add any more teams. In terms of new owners taking over teams, we've elected for 2018, we're probably not going to have any new owners, but we expect that there will be a couple openings in 2019. If you're listening to this, don't worry, you're not going to get kicked out, because I'm pretty sure the person who is going to get kicked out is not going to listen to this. I'm kidding. You're not going to get kicked out. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. But that is when we're like aiming for to get new people into the league. And we do have a couple names already. But if you know someone who you think would be a good choice, please let us know. And even if you're not sure, like, we're not just going to let them in. Like, we're going to talk to them and make sure that they're on board. And yeah, we'll go from there. But if you have people you know who would be a good fit in this league, I always want to know. Like, Ryan, I need you to just immediately pause this and just fast forward about the next 2 minutes, because I don't want you to hear any of this. But Ryan is one of the better owners in our league, and the only reason we have him is because Ash referred him to us. So, yeah.
That was 30 seconds.
Yeah, but I didn't want to risk if my praise of Ryan got too effusive.
I mean, I'm the best owner in the league, and you discovered me, so.
Yeah, that's true. Good thing you had that Blue Jay sticker on your laptop.
Yeah, it wasn't a sticker. It was acrylic paint. It's still there.
Okay. Yeah. I think, another thing, I mean, Nick can probably speak to this more, but a lot of people have moved into the stage of their lives where you've graduated from school and you're now working some kind of job, or better yet, you're unemployed, which means that you definitely have time to contribute content to the league website. Like, aside from the Garths, nobody in this league is married. Nobody in this league has kids. So, I mean, you have time. I want to see some more articles this year.
Yeah, I can second that. Moving into next season, even over the off season, I think there's a lot of great content that can be written and hopefully will be written. And yeah, I think that it's easy to overestimate the time commitment, but just the like act of writing down an idea really does not take as long as you think it does. And it's a lot of fun, and I find it really rewarding, and I think a lot of the people who have contributed have also found it really rewarding. And yeah, I'm very hopeful that the future is bright for content in terms of the FlexFox Fantasy Federation. So even if you don't have anything you've immediately thought of to contribute, or even if you just want to try writing a one-off in the like next 6 months we have without serious baseball, like, now's the time to do it and get some experience under your belt ahead of next season.
Oh, and the FlexFox Christmas party will be the big league gathering where I presume like awards and trophies and all that shit will be handed out. And last year there was a Secret Santa, which I did not participate in, but I inferred that it was fun. So that's definitely something to try to keep your schedule open for. If you can, try to be in Toronto around like December 20th, 22nd, 21st, whenever in there. But there may or may not be some other league gatherings at some point. I know there was discussion of a Marlies game. I'm not really sure. But if you're doing something in Toronto, I know a lot of us are at least relatively close to the GTA, so we can try to have a league meetup. And if someone is motivated enough to organize something, I'm generally down.
Yeah, I went to the Christmas party last year, and it was my first time meeting most of these guys face-to-face. And I can say that overwhelmingly, everyone in this league is better looking and taller than I thought they would be. So, I mean, it was a very pleasant surprise. Hopefully, if you're someone that didn't come to the Christmas party or a new owner, you will have that same experience I did.
I think that just about does it for this episode. I apologize for the length of this. And if you knew all these rules, hopefully you didn't listen to this part. So,
And even if you did know, hopefully it was a fun refresher course. I know it was good for me. Jeremiah, anything you want to say? Oh, Cam, go ahead.
If you have any questions about any like minor league shit, just send me a message and I'll help you out. You like, honestly, if you just send me a message, I can walk you through everything you need to do.
I have nothing to add to this episode.
Awesome. Well, this will be the final weekly show of the season for the 2017 season. I want to thank everyone that participated in it. It was a really good year for us. It was a lot of fun. We had just a ton of guests, all of whom were excellent. This was the most fun I've had in a single season in fantasy baseball, and I didn't even win shit. So that's a real testament to the overall strength of the league. This is obviously the part of the year where the weekly show becomes a lot less weekly, but we will hopefully still have new episodes coming out from time to time, recapping big league events like the minor league draft, all sorts of things related to that, any big trades. So you won't not be hearing from us before February, that's for sure. But before for now,
Sorry. The draft lottery also is important. That actually sets the draft order. I will run the draft lottery in the next couple days, and we can even look into doing some kind of podcast special about it, just to be assholes like every professional sports league. And this will be the last draft lottery ever, because we don't need a draft lottery. It just is an unnecessary complication. but it's in the Constitution, and fuck it, we'll do it. So, enjoy.
There you go. The first, last, and only draft lottery special.
So what's going to be replacing the draft lottery? Just standings?
So right now the Major League draft order is just determined by like where you finish this year. Obviously the winner of the Vaze picks first, right? Mm-hmm. And we're just probably going to make that mirror the minor league draft order because it's just simpler for everyone and there's less questions about it. But again, enjoy this draft lottery.
Enjoy it. We all will. And enjoy the offseason, everybody. It's nice to not have to set a daily lineup and actually relax and go outside and smell the fresh air from time to time. I think we will have a sweet victory to play us out for all of us here at Flex Fox Broadcasting. Let me just say to you all one last time for the season, good night and good fantasy.